With the rollout of the all-new Walther's Proto Metroliners and HO scale, we'd like you to meet one of the key people who not only helped us tremendously in developing these models, but their prototypes too. From 1966 to 1971, Bob Watson was coordinator of the Northeast Corridor Demonstration Project, overseeing the development and design of the Metroliners. Bob spoke about his unique insights and experiences with us during a recent phone interview, which it's our pleasure to share with you now. What was your first introduction to the high-speed project?
Well, it wasn't this high-speed project that my first introduction to high-speed rail of any kind came at the New York World's Fair in 1964, when I casually looked at the Japanese National Railway Shinkansen exhibit and thought that was wonderful, but I never had any idea that I'd get mixed up in that sort of thing. Beyond that, that was 2 years later, I guess. The first thing I heard about it was a phone call that somebody wanted to talk to me, and I went to an office in Philadelphia and began to hear what I was being offered, I guess, although I don't think I had much choice about accepting the job. And I picked up on it, and we went from there. There was no job description. It was strictly, you're gonna work with the government people and the bus people, and we're gonna bring the Metroliners. I'm not even sure they were named at that time, but I think they were. And you're gonna be our liaison between all the suppliers and the government folks, and you'll be the man on the ground to deal with them. And we don't want to be bothered with them up here, I think was the real message.
Oh my gosh, that's really interesting. What was your job title at the time you came on board?
Well, my job title was and remained coordinator, Northeast Corridor Demonstration Project. And as I say, there was no job description. It was a job that had never existed before. I had been in the mechanical department of the PRR for many years up to that point, and the job I was leaving was as master mechanic of the Philadelphia division. So I guess they figured most of the effort was going to be needed in some sort of an engineering or mechanical way, although I did have experience with the transportation department as a train master at a couple of places before, earlier in my career.
Neat stuff. Who were some of the key players or notable personalities you worked with at that stage in the project?
Initially, for the railroad, there was a fellow by the name of Jim Diffenderfer, who was an assistant vice president for special projects, and he was mainly interfaced with the government people and was there to make things sound good for the railroad. Other than he on the railroad, George Weaver was the assistant chief mechanical officer for engineering, equipment engineering. And of course, I was on the staff of the general manager of the Eastern Region. That was George Fawn. And I had occasional meetings later on as things got worse, I guess, or better in some cases, very few cases. I had meetings with the railroad vice president of operations, Dave Smucker. And then my major interfaces initially were with Department of Commerce people. Of course, they later became part of the Department of Transportation. In the Office of High-Speed Ground Transportation, the director of that office was Dr. Bob Nelson, and his right-hand man was Ed Ward. And I have several other people on the ground with me from one time or another. Kurt Law, a brilliant young engineer from the B&O who had joined the Department of Commerce just for this program, but he died very suddenly a few weeks after I met him, and he was replaced by Ken Lawson, and who had come off the BART project in San Francisco, and there were several others from the Office of High Speed Ground Transportation. And then there were people from the Bud Company, their chief engineer, and who had been involved with the development of the car at Red Lion in Philadelphia, the Red Lion plant. It was Norm Fesmire. Occasionally I met had a meeting with others with the president of the bike company, Phil Scott, but there were many others, Sam Madeira, Ed Wisner, other officials of the bike company. One in particular, who was became my nemesis, was a fellow by the name of Fred Proe. He was a corporate vice president. He was ultimately put in charge of the bike company operations at Marsville, where we were testing the cars. And he had no railroad experience, but he was there to crack the whip and try to force things through the knothole. And it didn't always work. But he was sort of effective, and he brought a very good consultant in to help us by the name of John Marchetti. And, of course, there were GE and Westinghouse and WABCO engineers on the ground all the time. All of them were quite good engineers, doing their best to get things moving, but it was pretty well bottled up for quite a while.
So you really were right in the middle of everything. Were there any specific areas or projects that you were involved with, and for roughly how long?
Well, I began in September of 1966, and I stuck with it until December of 1971. I left the railroad in the end of 1971. But yeah, the initial project was with the Department of Commerce, later to become the Department of Transportation, for test cars, which were purchased by the Office of High Speed Ground Transportation. So we had to get them through acceptance testing, and they were billed as forerunners of the Metroliners, but they really were nothing more than souped-up Silverliner commuter cars, MU cars, very much like the other cars in the Philadelphia region, except that they had high-speed gearing. But it took a lot of work and a lot of effort to get them to reach the required maximum speed to pass their acceptance test, but that finally happened. As I've said a number of times, we ran at night with no other traffic on the railroad, with the catenary voltage jacked up to about 13,000 volts, and downhill with a tailwind, and we made 155 miles an hour in April of 1967.
Wow, that's really amazing. It sounds like you wore a lot of hats. Did you have really specific duties over the time you were involved in these projects?
Well, my duty was to act as liaison and do what was necessary to keep the railroad out of trouble, to provide access to the test people, the test cars as well as the Metroliners belonged to the Bud Company. So they really were in charge of the testing until we accepted them. But I was the railroad's representative for accepting the cars. And in the case of the four test cars, I represented and helped the Department of Commerce and the Office of High Speed Ground Transportation gain acceptance of their cars. Specific projects within that group, we had a lot of different tests. Initially, the test cars were involved with track geometry work. We had catenary and pantograph testing, interaction tests, ride quality. We developed with the mobile telephone system that ultimately went into the Metroliners with AT&T and Bell Labs. We did some ad hoc work on the auto train, which was a little bit of a sidelight. And ultimately, when the Metroliners began to arrive, we sidelined the test cars and began to work with the Metroliners. And in addition to them, of course, in the middle of that program, we also had to deal with the United Aircraft Turbo Train, which came, which needed track, a high-speed track on which to meet its acceptance criteria. So we had it for a few weeks in December of 1967, and it ultimately reached a speed of 170.2 miles an hour, which I believe is still the North American speed record for passenger equipment that went into revenue service.
Wow, that's really something else, too. Those first 2 years of development really had to be quite memorable, especially given the deadlines and the political pressures from all the angles and all the restrictions you had to work under with all those proprietary designs. What was the high point for you during that time?
Well, they were mostly low points, but there were a few high points. Of course, the test track was not ready when we started, so that sort of held us back. But any test that we ran which had a very few or minor problems was a high point. As I mentioned, the acceptance to test of the four test cars at 155 miles an hour was a high point. The first two Metroliners that arrived on the property performed very well for a day or two, and we managed to get to 164 miles an hour with them. And then, of course, we had, through the rest of the program, every car had to reach at least 160 miles an hour without any other difficulties, and we eventually got them all through. So those were all high points. There were some other interesting, I'm not sure how significant they were, but other things have happened. One in particular that I noted for this interview is the Metroliner ball, which was sponsored and set up by the Travelers Aid Society of Washington, D.C. They were a bunch of movers and shakers, the wives of movers and shakers in Washington, who were going to have a big gear party to celebrate the success of the Metroliner. Originally, the Metroliner was supposed to have started service in October of 1967, and they planned this big party for February of 1968. And at that point, we had nothing capable of running, but they had booked the band and the caterers and all the white tie decorations for Union Station in Washington. And so we had to perform for them. We dragged a car down to Washington and cleaned it up and plugged it into wayside power, turned on the heat and lights, and everybody thought it was wonderful. So, but the band went on, the band played, the society folks were all there and danced. And the only good thing that I can think of that came out of it is that we did get our problems recognized by some of these people in Washington who thought we were not doing our job. I was able to speak with Alan Boyd at that time, and he and a few others eventually brought about a government industry task force to help us get through some of the technical problems and in some cases redesign some of the components on the for the cars.
So behind the scenes, what were some of the challenges you faced working alongside three major project suppliers at once and within the railroad itself?
Well, of course, the bigger problem was that Westinghouse and GE were the two propulsion contractors, and they were supposed to work together, but they weren't allowed to meet with each other without a lawyer and legal representation for both sides to avoid antitrust issues. And so their designs were compatible, but not entirely. And there were a lot of little issues of that type that came into play. Everybody cooperated, but it was just took time to work all the bugs out. And sometimes there were people that tried to force the issue. At one point, we were told to operate a six-car train, which was to be the standard train for the corridor service. Up to that point, we'd been working with two-car couplets and trying to get enough of them together without faults and without failure to put together as a six-car train, and we hadn't gotten there. But we put six cars together and one day and had a whole bunch of people on board to witness our success and proved that we were holding up the show somehow or other. We took off from Morrisville to head out onto the test track. We got about 7 miles out, and of the six cars, only one of them was still alive. All the other five had died. So that sort of proved the point, and we got a lot more help on the project after that.
Very interesting. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. You know, that had to be kind of a thrill, though, to actually see a completed Metroliner. What was your reaction the first time you actually saw one?
Well, I thought they were interesting. They didn't look quite as nice as I had hoped they would, but I didn't think they lived up to the level of all the press and the hype that had been given them. But They looked good enough tonight. We thought they would work, but we've had the test car experience behind us, and we've had trouble with them, and I would guess I was just cautiously optimistic about their success at that point.
And then, of course, right in the middle of all of this, the Pennsylvania and New York Central merged to create the Penn Central. How did that merger impact you and the projects or some of the jobs you were handling?
Well, that is an interesting question, but there was absolutely no effect whatsoever. This was a PRR project. The PRR had signed the contracts with the government and the Bud Company. The New York Central folks that came on board had enough on their hands, and so did the rest of the PRR people. We were really left alone after the merger. We were sort of an independent little cell of activity that people knew and paid a little attention to, but the folks from the merger had no effect on us whatsoever. We did pick up a few people in the eastern region who had been New York Central folks, and they worked very well with us. But Mr. Perlman came around one day, and we were all prepared to greet him and tell him all about the wonders of our work, and he went right by us and never stopped to look. So we had no interface whatsoever with the merger.
Wow, that is intriguing, and I wondered about that. That was one of the things that sort of wanted to bring that up. You don't read or hear too much about that, and I guess that would explain why.
Nobody cares.
Yeah. You know, that had to be kind of exciting and scary all at once, too. Do you remember anything about that first day of regular operation in January of 1969?
Well, the first day of operation was the water was over the dam at that. But the real test for us was the day prior to that, when we ran the VIP train from Washington to New York with all sorts of dignitaries aboard. Mayors and senators and congressmen and railroad presidents and all sorts of people, and made stops in a little ceremony at Baltimore and again at Wilmington. We stopped at 30th Street for about an hour and a half while we had a ceremony there. The speakers were Mr. Saunders and Alan Boyd, the Secretary of Transportation. A big lunch there for everybody. And then the train went on from there and went to stop at Trenton for another little ceremony in Newark and New York. And that we got through that all right. And I figured if we got past that, we'd be all right. So the first day, which was the very next day, first day at Revenue Service, I was sort of played out at that point. I stayed in the office. We had riders on every train who reported into us what was going on. Actually, it was only one train at that point, but we waited for his reports, and everything went well, and it was sort of an anticlimax.
Wow, that's intriguing, yeah, to know to be a part of such a thing and see it go so well at the beginning like that. You know, in that in mind, what's the one thing that model railroaders should really know about Metroliner history and operations but probably don't?
Yeah, we ran a maximum of 6-car trains. That's the most we could run. We ran with pantographs up on 2nd and 4th and 6th cars to maintain the proper spacing, 170 feet between pantographs. If we had an odd number of cars or were coupled in any other way, like an AN to a BN, we were limited to 100 miles an hour or less. And there were some serious issues with diaphragms at the ends of the cars overlapping through certain crossovers that we had to blank off the vestibules so that people could not pass through them when we were going over the crossovers. It was particularly in Baltimore, entering Baltimore from the north, and going into Penn Station in New York. There were some crossover conditions that were not good for people that had this interference of the diaphragms.
So how do you think the rollout of the new Walther's model will help preserve these important trains? Do you see this as the legacy of the Metroliner as a successful experiment that it kind of helped pave the way for Acela?
Well, I think it's a very historic point on the map. I think we proved something that we could that we eventually could move a lot of people and it would be a popular service. I think Walther's activity and producing a good model of those cars is very worthwhile. I hope it's successful and that you sell a lot of them. It certainly is a model that needs to be out there for people to see, because there's very few of them left. Actually, those that are left have been stripped of pantographs and are running as cab cars here and there. And I guess there's one in a museum that is not in very good shape at all. So they're not going to see a three-dimensional Metroliner in full scale, so it's good to have it in HO.
Yeah, that was something that surprised me. I mean, considering how significant these really were, of course, you know, 40 years after the fact in hindsight, to read about that and that there really was no major preservation effort done, that was really very surprising. What's your best memory of your time with the entire Metroliner project?
My best memory? I think probably the people I worked with. We had a very good crew of people. We had people that had been trained by a special training group headed by a friend of mine, Al Buchan, and the fellows that came off that program became riders and worked very closely with us to make it a success. I had a couple of very close friends, who my assistant, a fellow by the name of Tom Butler, and John Marchetti, whom I had mentioned before from the Bud Company, who were my right and left hands all the time. So I think the people we worked with were really the key to it. We never had an injury or an accident among our people in the 6 years that I was with it, and I think that has to be the highlight of my memories.
Excellent. That's pretty much everything I had. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you think you'd like to comment on? Or
one point was that we ran a POTUS, President of the United States, for President Nixon in January of 1970. As far as I know, that was the last POTUS that's been run. Well, maybe not. I don't know. Maybe there's been one more recent than that. But that was significant, and it took a lot of work to get ready for that. And of course, we kept our fingers crossed throughout that day. He came from Washington to Philadelphia on a Metroliner, a special train, and went home again. He came up to a Philadelphia Orchestra concert and went home, we had no trouble. The other thing is, I mentioned that in June of 2007, we placed a plaque at Princeton Junction to commemorate 40th anniversary of all the high-speed tests that had been conducted on the test track between Trenton and New Brunswick. And that plaque is in the eastbound station at Princeton Junction and apparently still there. Whether anybody pays much attention to it or not, I have no idea.
No, I confess, I love stuff like that, especially when I trip over them by accident. And I discovered there's actually a web page out there for all of our state's historical markers. So
there they are. But yeah, well, we've got one there. I don't know. I hope it'll stay. It's a nice bronze marker that was put up by the PRR Technical and Historic Society. And we had a few other. The Bombardier is the current owners of the patents and the successor to the Bud Company, and GE, I think, had also helped in it, and Westinghouse.
That's very neat. Yeah, that's a really nice legacy, a real nice tribute to, like you say, yourself and all the people who are there. And that's really very, very nice of everybody. That's a neat thing. Appreciate your taking the time to be with us here this afternoon very, very much.
Well, very good, Lance.
Excellent. Thank you, Bob. Appreciate your time.
You bet.
Take care. Bye now.
Thanks for listening. For complete details on the Walther's Proto Metroliner and HO scale, please visit us online at walthers.com today.